Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap Podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Finally, this week, Mercedes announced a teammate of Lewis Hamilton. 2017 cars will be much faster, and there might be light at the end of the tunnel for Manor. That and more in this week's episode. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone, the worst kept secret of early 2017 is out. And yeah, Valtteri Bottas will drive alongside Lewis Hamilton this season. And straight to the point, Fergal, do you think it was the right decision?
Well, I think we won't really know if it is the right decision or not until we see what Bottas can do in the Mercedes. But yeah, I think Bottas is a very decent driver. He's certainly not the worst option that Mercedes could have went for. Pastor Maldonado was looking for an F1 seat. Bottas, he's a good driver, I think. He's done well at Williams with the car he's had. So I think next year he's going to have a race-winning car, more than likely a championship-winning car. So yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what he can do. And I'm sure there will be many, many people looking to see if he can challenge Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, I think that'll be the biggest focus, at least in the beginning of the season. Everyone will look, basically at every lap in practice and qualifying in a race, how will Bottas actually compare to Lewis Hamilton? I would say that. And yeah, coming back to signing him, actually, I think Mercedes had three options. The first option, signing a really big name like Vettel or Alonso, but of course both of them were tied into their contract, so that wasn't an option. Then going for a more experienced driver that seems to be quite fast, like Bottas or, like Sainz, but he was also under contract. And the third option was to go for a junior driver like Esteban Ocon or Pascal Wehrlein. And I think they chose the middle because I think they were not brave enough to actually give their junior drivers really the opportunity to perform against Lewis Hamilton at the top of the field just after maybe one season or half of the season. So it might get interesting, however, next season again, because Mercedes, I think, only signed Bottas for 1 year. Is that correct?
Yeah, they signed him on a one-year deal with the option to add on an extra year, depending on how he performs, which really throws the 2018 transfer market into a big excitement zone, because look at 2017 2016, and the I guess there was no real excitement around who could be driving next year, especially after Raikkonen was kind of the sealer for last season. When Raikkonen's deal was signed, we knew there was no one was going to be going to Ferrari. We thought no one would be coming in at Mercedes. We knew Van Dorn would be coming in at McLaren. There was no real movement. But then when Rosberg retired, obviously that all just went to crap. There was just it just went everywhere. The F1 community went into overdrive with excitement. So and I think we're going to experience something very different next year, unless Bottas performs well. But there'll be a lot of pressure on him to perform quickly, because Mercedes aren't going to wait until the end of the year to decide whether they want to keep him or not, because there's not going to be enough time. McLaren have already said that they want to start negotiation with Alonso early on in the season, and I'm sure Ferrari would like to do the same with Vettel to keep him on. So I think Bottas really, realistically, probably has maybe 5-6 races to really show what he can do, and after that he could be getting in a danger zone of being replaced immediately.
Yeah, but the question really is then, how do you judge him, or what would you say is an acceptable result within the first six races. Maybe like two wins compared to four wins of Hamilton, assuming that Mercedes is still dominant.
Well, I think it's important that Mercedes treat their drivers equally, and that's something that Lewis Hamilton has always said. He's always said he wants a team to treat their drivers equally, and I mean, it really depends how highly Mercedes rate Bottas, because if they see him as a championship contending driver, then they're going to expect him to be fighting for the wins, really putting it to Hamilton, really challenging Hamilton. But maybe they possibly see him as someone to back up Hamilton that is there to collect the points to go towards the constructor championship, much like we saw in the early 2000s with Ferrari, where Michael Schumacher was winning all the races, winning all the championships, and then there was Barrichello there who was just getting consistent points to make sure that Ferrari was winning the constructors. So yeah, it really depends how highly Mercedes rate him, but I think the main thing he'll want to do is just stay out of trouble and not go crashing into anybody, especially Hamilton.
Yeah, as he did in Bahrain last season.
Yeah.
it's going to be interesting, very interesting. So I'm really looking forward to the beginning of this season, and also looking forward to the winter testing, of course. But the move of Bottas really opened up another seat then, and that of course was the seat at Williams. And we had all that emotional goodbye scenes in Brazil last season, and well, it was all for nothing. He's back. Felipe Massa will drive again next season with Williams, and personally I think it wasn't the right decision. I mean, of course he's a good driver and so on, but he made the decision and everyone already said goodbye. It was a very healthy goodbye, to say it this way. He was a respected driver, whatever. But now they should have gone with more, well, of course they do already have a youngster with Lance Stroll, but I mean, wouldn't it have been good if they had signed Wehrlein, for example, or someone else? I mean, of course there's the thing with the Martini sponsorship, but I'm a bit disappointed. I can understand it, but I'm disappointed.
Yeah, I think Massa, he's not a bad option, and
not at all, no.
Yeah, and in a way, I'm sort of glad that we'll see him again, because I do like Massa as a driver, but I would have loved to have just Williams just to have thrown a curveball and just signed someone really like unorthodox, someone like Antonio Felix da Costa, someone like that, someone that really deserves a seat in F1 and has a lot of racing experience, and I think da Costa fits that category perfectly. Maybe not even you spoke about Wehrlein or whoever, and but I think it would have been great to see them sign someone not within the F1 community, not someone who had just left an F1 seat. I thought from early on in the season that Felipe Nasr would get the seat at Williams, but I got the first name right. I mean, it's still a Felipe in the team, and Massa and Nasr sounds pretty similar, so again, he's not the worst option, but it is a shame to have done such a emotional and memorable goodbye to Massa, and then it all just came for nothing. But I don't think Massa ever really wanted to retire as such. I mean, I think he was happy with retiring, but if he had the option, well, clearly if he would have had the option, he would have stayed on in Formula One, because I never really heard him say, yeah, I want to quit Formula One. Someone like, Jenson Button, for example, was really outspoken. He said he didn't want to race in F1 next season, but I never heard Massa say that. So I think Massa will actually be quite happy to to be back in next season. And yeah, it will be very interesting to see him against Lance Stroll. There's a big age difference there. I'm not quite sure what age Massa is, but I mean, surely there's nearly 20 years between them. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting year for them too.
Yeah, as you said, maybe it was really some kind of a decision where he thought, there's this young guy, Lance Stroll. He's got a lot of money, and maybe it's better for the team, you know, if he comes in. They've got Valtteri Bottas, and I had so many years in F1, and then maybe he thought, yeah, I'll leave now before I get pushed out or something, you know? Or it was really the case that Williams wouldn't offer him a new contract as such. You never know what happened behind the scenes, and yeah, now he's happy to come back. But yeah, as you said, I'm totally 100% with you there. I would have laughed it if they signed someone not directly from the F1 crit or community. But we can wish and hope for a lot of things. F1 teams will always do something else. So
yeah, they'll always do what we don't want them to do. That seems to be the case.
Yeah, and we talked about Wehrlein already. Basically we talked about that two episodes ago. We already announced Wehrlein signs with Sauber, but in the end it wasn't really officially announced. That was only when they announced the Bottas deal and the Massa deal, everything fell into place. And yeah, Wehrlein will be with Sauber next season. We talked about that already. Of course, he must be he must be hugely disappointed not to get the Mercedes seat, because he also was pretty outspoken about how he would really like to drive for Mercedes and that he's ready and so on. And yeah, so it must have been difficult for Toto Wolff to actually tell him that he will not drive a Mercedes. And yeah, yesterday actually, yeah, there was the Race of Champions, and yeah, it was also quite funny, or it was a bit unbelievable what Wehrlein did there. And maybe it also showed a bit his that he's maybe not as mature as Bottas is in terms of driving. You know, that was the first thing I thought when I saw what happened. For all the viewers or listeners who didn't watch the Race of Champions, basically Wehrlein raced against Massa in a 1-versus-1 race, and at the end of the race, coming up to the finish line, he really tried to maximize the road, drifted really to the edge of the track, hit one of the barriers that was in the middle of the track. I don't know what then happened. Maybe something broke, or the steering, maybe it broke or something. And then he steered into Massa, rolled the car, and I don't know. It was so unbelievable to watch, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite scary actually. You know, I felt pretty scared for the passenger that he had beside him. I mean, Wehrlein's been in crashes before, but I mean, is the passenger just a member of the public?
Yeah, it's basically there was a competition. You know, you could actually write some kind of tweet or whatever, why you would be the best choice to go in the car as a passenger. I mean, 100 points. you win a passenger ride, and then the driver rolls the car.
Yeah, I think that guy got more than he bargained for, because I mean, I think the Wehrlein, sure, like Wehrlein probably got over it by now. I mean, he's crashed before, but I mean, that guy that was in the passenger seat will still be shaking with fear, because I know I would be. It was a very, very freaky accident. Really, it looked quite terrifying. It was really quick, actually. The vehicles were going very quick. Thankfully, everyone was okay. And yeah, but coming to what you said about him and Sauber, yeah, I think he will be very disappointed to not have taken that Mercedes seat and ended up at Sauber, because you know it not only did he miss out on the Mercedes seat but also the Force India seat, so yeah, I think in a way he might be glad that he has a seat secured in Formula One, even though it's nowhere near the seat he could have had. But look, it's I think he'll probably just see it as maybe like another opportunity, and next season he'll come back strong and possibly show Mercedes why they should have signed him. And who knows, if he does a good enough job next year and Bottas doesn't, then maybe Wehrlein could be in contention for a 2018 Mercedes seat.
Yeah, who knows? And coming back to what you said, that maybe it wasn't that big of a deal for Wehrlein, that crash. Actually, he announced that he will not take part in the Nations Cup today. I don't know whether you read that, but actually, his doctor said as a precautionary, I don't know, measure, he should fly home and not take part at the. At the last event there.
Yeah, and he also said that his main focus, he said he would love to race, but his main focus this coming year is Formula One. So, I mean, you can't really go against the doctor's advice. So, yeah, he's left Vettel to do Team Germany proud. I'm sure you're cheering them on.
Well, I think actually the Race of Champion might actually be on while we are recording.
Yeah,
So,
I think so, yeah.
yeah,
And
I'm not really.
as I'm aware, I think Vettel's doing quite well at the moment, but I'm not too sure.
I'll watch as soon as we finish that one. But before that, yeah, Wehrlein wants to focus on next season, maybe also in terms of his fitness and so on, and that might be a good choice because I don't know who it was. I think Pirelli dropped some numbers, and the public media wrote some stories about that 2017 cars might be up to 40 kph faster in some corners, and some corners will even become straights. Turn 3 in Barcelona, a really, really challenging corner, will be flat. When I heard that, I was really amazed. I mean, those 2017 cars must be absolutely amazing to drive, or let's put it that way, they must be very hard to drive with that G-forces. And developing the car throughout the season with a new aero philosophy, I think they'll gain even more aerodynamic grip throughout the season. And they might be at their high in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, they certainly do appear to be very sticky cars to the road.
Yes.
Yeah, again, pre-season testing is going to give us a good idea. The reports from there are going to give us a good idea of what they're going to be like. But yeah, I mean, the cars are going to be pulling so much more G-force next year. So drivers are really going to have to be on top of their fitness. I mean, it's going to be hard for someone like Lance Stroll, for example, who's come from Formula 3. I mean, I think even the jump from Formula 3 to a 2016 Formula 1 car is a massive difference in G forces and speed. And I can just imagine, sorry, I can't even imagine what a Formula 3 car to a 2017 Formula 1 car is going to be like, because it's going to be so much faster and just, yeah, so much more G-force and strain on the body. So he's someone like Stroll, who I believe is the only rookie for next season, will have a lot to muscle to build up and a lot of training to do. But I mean, I'm super excited to see what the cars can do, and how fast they can go. And also, I heard something else as well about Pirelli tires, and that apparently they're going to be pretty low degradation next year.
Yeah, I heard that too.
So, which I think if that's true, I think it's kind of a shame, to be honest, because, well, in a way it is a shame, and in a way it's not, because it's sort of your own opinion, because if the tire degradation is really high, then you're going to get more pit stops and there's more unpredictability. But if the tire deg is low, of course you're not going to get as much pit stops, and there's not going to be many different strategies. But the drivers won't have to tire save as much, and they can go, they can push more, which I guess for the drivers is good, and if they can push hard, it's good for the fans. So, yeah, I think overall the 2017 spec cars should be good.
Yeah, I think you really have to look at that from two sides. As you said, well, there might be less strategic options, but on the other hand, if drivers can push more, they can maybe follow other guys closer because it doesn't really make. Yeah, well, it will still make a difference because of the dirty air, but it will not affect tire life or tire wear as much as it did last season. So they might be able to drive three, four, five laps closer to the car in front and then drive more overtakes. And also now, with maybe only one stop per race, they need to make those overtakes stick. You know, they can't just wait and say, yeah, we'll save a little bit of tires and save a little bit of fuel and wait until the other guy boxes and then do some kind of overcut. They have to do the overtake now on track. And that's something positive, I would say.
It is positive, but then the other question is, will they be able to overtake? Because
DRS.
the more, well, yeah, but I mean, you want to see Max Verstappen style overtakes
Yeah.
from everyone, and you really got to wonder if the aerodynamics that are being produced will hamper the overtake because of the increased dirty air. Some drivers and engineers think it will hurt the racing, and other drivers and engineers think it won't. So, yeah, it's just another one of those things that we'll just have to wait and see in Australia. And hopefully we can get some exciting racing. That's all I hope for. As long as we have close, exciting racing,
Yeah.
I'm happy.
And you know, I would also be very happy if we had 22 cars on the grid in Australia. And we might actually get that because I heard some news that there's actually somebody interested in buying Manor. Do you know more on that?
Yeah, there was reports, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, that a investor is interested in purchasing the team.
Wasn't that an Indonesian investor?
Well, if it's Indonesian, then my guess is that it's Ricardo Galil, who is a father of Sean Galil, who races in GP2. So I think if that happens, then Sean Galil will be a driver on the grid for next season. So, but yeah, like I said, Manor, I mean, everyone is just really hoping that that deal goes through and that Manor make it to the grid next season. But also, actually, something that actually I've just thought of a few minutes ago. Well, when we were talking about Verline, Mercedes gave engines to Manor at a reduced cost because they fielded their junior drivers.
Yeah.
And next season, we know there won't be, if Manor do make it to the grid, there won't be any Mercedes junior drivers there.
It seems like that, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, will they have to pay the full prices for engines next year? There's a maybe that's something else to worry about. I'm not too sure. Maybe it was a multi-year deal, no matter if the drivers left the team or not, I'm not too sure. But they also requested that their 2000 they wanted to field their 2016 car for the first couple of races, which would be, well, I mean, it's that's kind of dangerous, I think, because if you think of the difference in speed between a 2016 Manor and a 2017 Mercedes, for example, but I think,
They wouldn't make the 107% rule whatsoever.
no, they wouldn't. And I think the FIA said that they have to. I think they can run their 2016 chassis, but some parts of their car have to be up to spec with 2017, like the air, like the front wing and the rear wing and barge boards and monocoque and stuff like that. I think didn't Force India in 2015 run the 2014 chassis up until Silverstone, and then when they got to Silverstone, they I think something like that. So but I think whatever happens, as long as Manor have a future on the grid, then we should just look forward to that. But it will be interesting to see if they do get investment, who the drivers would be. I mean, I'm guessing if it is an Indonesian investor, it's going to be Ricardo Gallail, and then I think Sean Gallail, who has competed in GP2 for the last couple of years, he will more he will well I mean it's his father will give him a seat in F1, but I'm not really sure who else could be there. Do you have any suggestions?
Now, I just read it on the Reddit forum, and I'm not quite sure. I don't think it was the one you said. Yep, but I think it was actually someone really unrelated to Formula One, just an investment group or something. But you know, we heard so many rumors of investment groups buying teams, buying the whole Formula One group, you know. I only believe it when it's really done, and I really, as you said, I really hope it will be done. But yeah, good question actually with the Mercedes engine deal. I didn't really think about that, but you know, that would really increase the costs for racing massively, definitely for Manor next season. And yeah, in terms of building the car, I would say, or with designing the car, I would say they must have finished their 2017 design, because they said they started designing the new car in January 2016 or something. So I would assume that they finished all the design stuff, but yeah, maybe they now the money is missing to actually produce all the wings and all the stuff that has to go on the car. So that might be a possibility why they or why that rumor is around. And yeah, as you said, we all hope that they can make it to the grid and that we do have a full grid, because although you know they are always, or most of the time, they are driving around as back markers, only blocking the guys lapping them. But yeah, you know, they also add a bit to the show. In Australia 2016, we saw Wehrlein really having a great start, being in P13 or something like that. And you're always happy for those teams. You know, you're always happy if they are in a good position. You don't really feel that for any other team, right?
No, you don't. And I think it's quite a nice story, I think, with Manor. They came in with the two other teams, Caterham and HRT, and Manor are the last one standing. I mean, HRT dropped out after 2012, Caterham after 2014. So I think it would be a great story if Manor kept on, because their whole since 2010, their whole focus has really just been to stay on the grid, to secure their future. And it really looked like up to the 2016 Brazilian Grand Prix that the future would be secure. But yeah, it's not a nice situation to see them in like that, because you want as many cars on a Formula One field as possible. You want as competitive a field as possible. So to lose Manor after 7 years of really pushing to secure the future, it would be a very sad story. But they still got, what is it, 9 days around that to secure their future. So let's just hope for the best.
Let's hope for the best, and let's move on to the comment section. Comment of the week. Get featured on the show by telling us your opinion. Yeah, as ever, if you want to comment on any of the topics we discuss here on the show, feel free to send us an email at info@the-sim-racer.com, or as well, we've got the podcast up as a video on YouTube, where you can also see our new overlay. We will upgrade that in the future with our live webcam, but for now it's only our pictures. So yeah, feel free to comment. We are really interested in your opinion. And in last week's episode, AxelR2706 commented, "I can't wait for the winter testing. One more month, but it's gonna feel like forever when you wait for it." And yeah, I absolutely can agree on that. I mean, I'm really looking forward, not only because the season starts again, but also I really want to know how the cars will look this season, not only in terms of livery, but really in terms of how did they shape the wings, and did any of the teams find a loophole? And you know, it's always that kind of interesting part of the season.
Yeah, it always seems every year we the wait for preseason testing goes on longer and longer, but I mean, that probably is the case, because this year there's been it's the longest preseason, or the longest wait to preseason, the longest winter in for Formula One for a long time. So yeah, we're all just patiently waiting, and yeah, like I said, it's going to be very interesting to see what the cars look like. I mean, we do have a general idea of what they will look like, but I mean, seeing is believing. So, and once we see them, we'll really get a good idea of what they're really going to be like, and also the liveries. I think, like we spoke about last week, the liveries are also very exciting. And McLaren. There's a lot of hype right now about McLaren, and the potential that they're going to bring out an orange livery for next season, which could be, I mean, that could be amazing. I think Ron Dennis has always been against a orange livery in the modern era of McLaren, but I mean, Ron Dennis isn't part of McLaren anymore, so yeah, it's all change.
Yeah, and talking of liveries, we might actually announce our guest for next week. We will have someone who really, or we'll not announce it, but we'll tease it. We'll have someone on the show next week who's really into liveries and really knows his stuff around designing those things. So if you're interested in liveries and general design stuff, make sure you you listen to next week's episode. We'll have an interview then, and it's going to be very interesting. And another new thing we've got is an own Twitter account for our Fastest Lap podcast. So if you want to follow us there, we'll tweet out a lot of information about Formula One, motorsport, and the podcast, of course. You can follow us at FLF1 podcast, or just type in Fastest Lap podcast, you'll find us. And of course, as you can see on the screen, or on your podcast text, you can follow me at The Sim Racer, or Fergal, what's your Twitter handle?
Mine is at FergalF1.
Okay, so go follow him. No, but if you want to do that, you are free to do it. We would really love to connect with you and maybe start a conversation about something. And yeah, that's all for this week's episode. I hope you'll be with us next week. Thank you very much. Wherever you are listening, we would really appreciate your feedback by commenting or rating the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.